Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. My guests tonight are clinical psychologist Dr. Roz Aker Black and James Marshall, relationship counselor and executive director of Kindred Hope Counseling Service. We are talking about your personal independence. This, of course, ahead of the 4th of July weekend, July 4th, also known as Independence Day. This is not a discussion about patriotism. It is a discussion about your own personal space in your head, your independence, your self-worth, time that you need to yourself to be yourself, even within the confines, the parameters of your relationship. Now, we're not taking any phone calls tonight, but you can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before the break, Dr. Roz, you were talking about how the manipulation of time and looking at the issue of personal space can be a bad thing. Please continue your point.
Yes, you know, sometimes if you've been in relationships or if you've had a culture of neglect around you, when you meet someone who wants you to spend all the time in the world with them, that can be a bad thing because that can also be possessive and a bit manipulative and a bit abusive in terms of them isolating you from the everyday things that you have normally done. So that's when that whole independence and can become a big problem when someone is trying to keep you from doing what it is that you would do in your everyday life if they weren't in your life, if that makes sense.
Can you give me an example of that, assuming that if he or she, once they convince you on during any particular incident to be with them instead of going to do what you want to do, that when you two are together, everything is fine, there's no tension. It's not emotionally abusive. There's nothing like that. He or she just wants you to, you know, to be with them, and you all have fun, and you're watching TV, or you're doing movies, or you're going out for walks, exercising. How do you know the difference between the good and the bad of that apparent manipulation or pulling them away from what it is that they want to do?
Great question. And I'm reminded of a show that used to be on OWN. It was only on for maybe one season or so. And the young guy in the relationship wanted his girlfriend to stay home from work.
Mm.
And because she stayed home from work, she missed some deadlines at work. So when it becomes disruptive in your everyday life, that is problematic. Especially if you want me to stay home from work to watch TV and I might possibly lose my job, that's problematic. If there's like no real reason for me to stay home from work only because you don't want me to go to work because of the men at work or something of that nature. And I forget the name of the show, but it was a really good show. Like he wanted her to wear basically lingerie to work one time. It was weird, a very weird dynamic. Very weird dynamic. So when
I definitely was not expecting you to say that.
I forgot the name of the show, but it was by the creators that created Girlfriends. I can't think of her name at this point. But it was a story of how she met her husband or whatnot. But it was definitely not healthy.
It sounds like a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. I was like, what is happening here? And why is she okay with this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you have to question someone's intentions about what's taking place, then that's, you know, when you start questioning things, that's your intuition talking to you about something doesn't feel right here. So you need to listen to that.
Your thoughts about that, James, about when the loss of independence is unhealthy in a relationship.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what Dr. Roz, you know, just said. I think one of the things that takes place is sometimes people try to use this whole guilt trip type of thing where they make you feel guilty for doing the things that an adult should be doing. Like, you know, they'll say things like, well, you know, didn't you just talk to your mom the other day? Why do you have to go past her house? Or, you know, you know, wasn't you at work all day? I mean, you have to stay, you know, later. And they just really begin to put that guilt on you that, you know, you feel like you're breaking your own moral code by doing something that healthy adults do. Like, you know, provide for their families, take care of their families, spend time with their friends, you know, or all those things. And I'm not talking about the times when we go to the extreme. I get it. You know, we have to make sure that we're putting our priorities in the proper place. But, you know, I think Dr. Ross said it really profoundly. We have to be careful about when people try to put this weight of guilt on our shoulders for being, you know, healthy individuals and for their own benefit, you know, just so that they can have their way or just so that they can, you know, feel good about themselves. It's a very, very dangerous thing. And that's some people who just don't like the idea of independence in a relationship. You know, they say things and they misuse things. Like, you got into a relationship so you can be a partnership. You got into this relationship so you can do this. And they take that to an extreme that's just really unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. So, James and Ross, but I'll start with James. Is there such a thing as too much independence in a relationship? And I ask because in modern relationships, whether you're married or just committed and unmarried, let's take, you know, if you are seriously committed, you know, to someone and she's a Dr. Roz. So Dr. Roz is not, you know, the mother for Leave It to Beaver, where she's sitting at home, baking cookies, waiting for her husband to come home every day. Look, if you're a stay-at-home mom and that's what you do, that's fine. But for many modern, you know, relationships, everybody's working and doing the side hustle and the side hustle and speaking and doing and going and everything else. How do you know, James, if there is just too much independence in a relationship?
Absolutely. You know, just like we talked about one extreme, there is another extreme. And I think some of the signs where a person might be being too independent is when they feel stressed because of their load. They just feel really overwhelmed because they have so much going on and they got to do this and they got to do that. Well, that might be an indication where that person has to look at themselves and see, what are some of the things that I can kind of partner with somebody else to accomplish? Because there are some loads in life that weren't allowed in our lives or created to be lifted by itself. You know, it's kind of like that old packing slip that they put on some boxes where it's a two-man lift or a two-person lift. You know, the idea is that, you know, there are going to be some things in life where we have to say, okay, how can we divide and conquer? You know, how can I focus on this while you focus on this? And then that way we should be able to really feel good and well-balanced within ourselves about all that we're doing. And I think another sign is when you're starting to miss out on great opportunities because you're just trying to do it all by yourself. You know, mm-hmm. So you're passing up on some really, really great opportunities that's coming your way because you're starting to say, well, I don't know how I can get this done. Or I don't know how I can do it all. Well, that might be a scenario where you will say, okay, to your significant other or your spouse or whoever it is in your life, you know, I have this great opportunity. If I pass this off to you, will this give, you know, this be something that fits, you know, your routine? And that way I can maybe focus on this. And, you know, we can kind of, you know, work together to accomplish what we could have never accomplished in isolation.
Your thoughts about too much independence or not enough interdependence, Dr. Ross, in a relationship?
That was a great point that James made, but I sometimes, like, you were using me as an example, and I'm like, I am the perfect example because we don't have kids, and mm-hmm. I'm a social butterfly, but I know not to come home at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh yeah, but that yeah, we're not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I can go to lunch with my girls and be there for hours, you know, when we were allowed, when COVID wasn't here. I could be there for hours. So just checking myself, knowing like, okay, your husband hasn't eaten all day. You need to get him some food. So you take the food home to him too. You know, sometimes you can, you have to be aware of your responsibilities as a spouse, you know, and so that comes, you know, you just have to be very cognizant of that. When someone is independent sometimes, they forget their role as a spouse or as someone's significant other, or it feels like that person is an afterthought. And so you have to be very aware that you are not making your spouse or your significant other an afterthought. So there are times when it can go to the other extreme where you are too independent. I mean, I've had girlfriends ask me, like, your husband allows you to do that? And then I have to pause and say, allows me?
See, what did I say? That's the same thing that I said when I was married and I got the phone call. So like I said, I don't think it's that unusual for, you know, women friends to assume that once someone is married, you can't do what you did before, even if there was nothing wrong with doing what you did. And but my attitude was the same as yours. Why are you asking me? Ask her. You know, I'm good with, but please, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please go ahead with your point.
No, that's quite okay. And you know, and when I say some people, I mean, I'm speaking of me, because when I was single, I would be out to 2-3 in the morning with my girls, just having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shutting the club down. But all that changed, you know, once I got married. Like, that's not happening. So, you know, just respecting the rules of your house, like, can kind of determine your independence, if that makes sense. Whatever you and your significant other have decided what works for your relationship, just respecting those, again, just respecting those boundaries makes all the difference.
James, how do you, does independence make your relationship stronger?
It certainly can make your relationship stronger. You know, I think most people want to be in a relationship with someone who has the ability to carry their own weight, who has the ability to kind of operate and do what they do, so that when the two of you come together, you're just kind of better than your individual parts. So it certainly makes it stronger, you know. And we gotta do that. I remember a songwriter once said, "I'm a movement by myself, but I'm a force when we're together. I can do it all by myself, but baby girl, you make me better."
Oh. Go ahead, James. Go ahead.
But it does make you a lot stronger when, you know, you can have your times where you can, you know, manage your own world, but then there's parts of your world that you can be one on, and you can, you know, have one and be on the same page and one accord and work together to accomplish those things.
I am talking to clinical psychologist Dr. Roz Aker-Black and James Marshall, relationship counselor and executive director of Kindred Hope Counseling Service. We are talking about your independence ahead of this 4th of July weekend, your personal, your emotional independence within the parameters of your relationships. How do you define that independence? How do you keep that independence? How do you make sure that your sense of independence and your mate's sense of independence are healthy for the relationship? And how do you know when it's unhealthy? We are not taking phone calls tonight, but you may hit me up on Twitter at HFisher, WHUR, or Harold T. Fisher on Instagram. So let's talk about some of the unhealthy pieces, because this is the much more difficult thing. You know, Dr. Roz, we've heard the term toxic relationships when things are just not healthy. First of all, can you be in a toxic relationship that is unhealthy, but not necessarily abusive, but it's still not good?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think if you're in a relationship where trust cannot be found, that can lead to toxicity. You know, and it may not lead to abusiveness of anything like that, but if you can't trust the person that you're with, that could lead to a very toxic environment because the individual may become very controlling, trying to control your actions, trying to control where you're going, trying to control what your day looks like. And that is absolutely toxic. I wouldn't encourage anyone to stay in that type of relationship.
Mm-hmm. So if you have lost that sense of independence and you are now emotionally dependent on someone, how do you know that you are emotionally dependent on someone, Dr. Ross?
That's a great question, because so many of us get caught up in a situation where we think the other person is supposed to make us happy. Here's the reality. You are the only person in control of your emotions. No one else can control those for you. And so thinking that someone else is responsible for your happiness, you are actually abusing yourself in that moment, because they're not. That's unfair to you. It's unfair to your partner. And it's unfair to the relationship. You are the only person in control of your emotions. No one else can control those things for you. So if you are depending on somebody else to make you feel good about who you are and to feel good about yourself, that's when you become emotionally dependent on that person. And that is not healthy in the least bit.
So what is the difference between that and someone who, prior to the relationship, was a happy person, but after entering into the relationship, they are happier?
That's a good question. So people
thrive. I try.
Great question. People thrive when they are loved correctly. You know, and so if you're in a relationship where you are happier, then that's probably a great thing. That means that some good things are happening in that relationship that is a benefit to you. That's very beneficial for you. So if you are thriving, that means that you're being loved the way that you deserve to be loved, that you need to be loved. And so that's not a bad thing at all.
Okay. So, James, when you realize that you are in a toxic relationship where your independence has been sacrificed, compromised, how do you find the strength to walk away? Let's throw away the financial piece where I don't know if I can afford to leave. I don't know what impact this is going to have on the kids. I don't know what my parents or friends are going to say. Just the real foundational conversation with yourself. How do you move from I could never leave no matter how much of my independence has been compromised to I really have to find myself again?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, you're on a roll today, as usual, but these are some really, really strong questions. Like, you know, I think the first thing is you have to call it what it is. You know, I think that's all, that it has to start there. You know, you have to be able to say the relationship is toxic. So often when we're in toxic relationships, we fall into this space where we continue to make excuses for us staying in a relationship or making excuses for the other person behaving the way they are. And we have to be able to say this relationship is not healthy. We have to label it that way. We have to call it that way. If we were to be in a biblical context, one of the things that God said when Adam was alone is it's not good for him to be alone. You know, so he called out what it was that wasn't right about, you know, a creation standpoint, right? So we got to call out sometimes what's not right about our relationship. And I think what happens is we try to move forward and try to get out, but we haven't been able to say it completely. We haven't been able to say that the reason I'm moving forward is because this person's unhealthy. We start, you know, trying to be kind, and we start, you know, teeter-stepping, you know, just kind of saying, well, maybe I'm moving in a different direction now. And that's never going to get you the energy and the motivation you need to be able to, you know, move into a healthy space. And so I think once you're able to say it, I think the next step is for you to begin to act on what you know to be true. And acting on what you know to be true is being honest and walking in that truth, that's your own truth, walking in that. And sometimes it requires some level of accountability. You need friends to be able to hold you accountable to it, but or family members or whoever it may be, counselors, to hold you accountable to walk in this new direction. But you got to be able to say it first. And some people just, mm-hmm. they just can't say it.
Which brings me to my next point. Dr. Roz, in the mm-hmm. saying it, can you go to your spouse or your significant other when you are feeling this loss of independence and saying, I have lost my sense of independence. I need to find myself again. Not even if the relationship is necessarily toxic, but it's certainly the level of health in the relationship is not as high as it should be. I can, you know, imagine that if a spouse or a girlfriend came to me and said, you know, I've lost myself in this relationship, I need to find myself, I think the most eloquent response would be, what you saying? So how should someone who was on the receiving end of that kind of conversation, Dr. Roz, respond, short of out of fear, terror? Oh my gosh, is she leaving me? Is, you know, do I need to give you a hall pass for the week? You know, I mean, it just kind of it kind of makes you wonder if you are trying to make sure that the relationship is healthy and someone believes they've lost their independence. That can be a scary thing.
Absolutely. I would probably look at my husband like he was crazy if he came to me with that.
See?
Just in all honesty.
Weren't you like, just on the deck listening to audiobooks? I let you be on the deck, and I brought you some ribs from the Rib Shack. What more do you want?
Exactly. No, but here's my favorite go-to. You're the one that put this thing in motion. You proposed. I didn't.
No. It's his fault. So it's, you should have just left me alone. Oh, gosh. No, that's not it.
But, you know, when someone does come with that, I mean, the person on the other end, the appropriate thing to do is to say, how can we fix this? What do we need to do to fix this? And then you be the one to go find the therapist to let that person know that you really are invested in your relationship being at its best. Just don't put one more thing on his or her plate when they're already feeling as if they're losing themselves. Try to lighten the load. As James was speaking about earlier, recognize that it is a partnership that you are in. And so try to work with your partner to ensure that they're in their best space. And sometimes that's you having to step up to do something that you may not want to do. So if you're the person on the other end and your spouse is telling you that, then that's when you say, well, let's try therapy. Well, maybe you should go to therapy to see what that's about. Maybe you should do your own individual therapy. And if need be, we can do couples counseling.
So you're not suggesting that the therapy be at the bar with the girls like you used to do?
No, absolutely not. Uh-uh.
Why not?
Professional.
Why not? I mean, I use the bar, you know, with the girls as an example, probably a bad example, but could part of that self-examination be about returning to the things that made you happy before you met me?
But the difference is, in a therapeutic process, you also get tools to deal with why you are feeling that way and figuring mm-hmm. out the core reason of why you may be feeling that way. And so one of the homework assignments from the therapist could be, go have a girls' night out. And so then you get to explore that under, you know, therapeutic guidance. Rather than saying, oh, I was just out with my girls because I needed this, and then this happened, and that happened, and this happened, and you begin to think you were still single and did some things that you probably shouldn't have done. So I always, as a therapist, I'm always going to encourage a therapeutic intervention just to make sure that you have the tools and the understanding of why you may be doing what you're doing or why you're thinking the way that you're thinking and why it's making you feel that way, and then those thoughts and those feelings are influencing your behavior.
James, what is the key to owning up to your own responsibility as it has to do with independence within the relationship?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, I think the key is really being able to explore your own awareness. I think we just have to, you know, at times take moments to really listen to ourselves. We know when things are kind of off, right? You know, when you're not feeling good, when you don't feel like you're feeling smothered, or you're feeling overwhelmed, or you feel like, you know, you're losing your identity. And I think, you know, the key is being aware that, you know what, I got to take some time to really take responsibility to make sure that I'm giving myself my own space and my own thing, my own hobby, my own habit, or whatever it may be. And, you know, no one can force you into that, because no one is going to be aware about your self-awareness because they're not you. So you gotta be self-aware. You gotta take the time to really dig into your awareness. What do you think? How are you feeling? What are your desires? You know, what are your actions? You know, what have you observed? This digging into your own awareness, I think, is a key point of taking responsibility of your own independence.
As it relates to the evolution of a relationship, particularly for those people who have been together a long time, who have been married for a long time, and some could say it is a loss of independence, but some could just say it is growth. It is change as people grow and they develop, they evolve. Should a longtime partner or a spouse always be aware that there can be some change in your partner or spouse? I mean, you don't want to, Dr. Roz, constantly put your partner or spouse under, you know, scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you notice a change or something, but how should you be more active and seeing how these things go?
That's a great point. And the truth of the matter is that a long-term relationship or marriage is always about renegotiation. I'm not going to be the same person that you met 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 6 months ago. We change. We all grow. But being able to talk about what that change is doing to the relationship, I think James brought up a great point in a relationship. So always making the assessment of, how am I showing up in my relationship? What are my actions doing? Is it benefiting my relationship, or is it bringing more discord in my relationship? And I think having that conversation with yourself and checking yourself can in turn make sure that your relationship is in the place it should be. But you're always going to be renegotiating in a relationship, in a long-term relationship, because we do grow. I'm not the same as I was just yesterday. You know, and that's not a bad thing. People, you need to grow. The beauty of getting older is growth. It's growth. It's personal growth. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Having the conversation about where you are in your growth and how it's affecting your relationship makes all the difference in the world.
What does that negotiation look like, sound like?
Well, I'll just give an example of myself. I used to be, again, I am a social butterfly. But now with COVID, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything because I don't trust people. So I don't want to be out and about. And so that's very different from who I was just a year ago. I don't want to be in the presence of germs, I should say, sadly. But, you don't know how people live their lives, and I don't want to put myself, even though I'm vaccinated, I don't want to put myself in harm's way, if that makes sense, if I don't have to. So, you know, that's probably going to be a hard sell when my husband is probably ready to go back out in the world and do some things. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to go, because it's not who I used to be.
And so the negotiation is, here, you, Roz, you can sit on the deck, but I'm not.
Right. Right, right. The renegotiation would be, well, I'm going to go hang out and I'll see you when I get back, which would be totally different than what our relationship ever looked like, because he's antisocial and doesn't like to be out and about. So I was like, oh, wait, you're leaving without me? Like, that would be problematic.
For some final thoughts on how to live your best emotionally independent life, James.
Yeah, that's a
good question.
Man, this is just amazing. But yeah, if you're going to live your best emotionally independent life, I think you got to make sure that you're spending time and finding a safe space. You know, you got to feel good and feel like you're always moving towards a space of safety. Safe enough where if you need to take some time to get away from your spouse or whoever it may be, that you're in the type of relationship and an environment where you can do that. Safety if you need to take the time to, you know, if it's a relationship where that's not a significant other, where you just feel safe of getting away to be able to think through some things and to be able to grieve when you need to grieve and be able to celebrate when you need to celebrate, you know, being able to step away to sometimes celebrate yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we have to make sure that we're always working to create a safer environment for our emotions to flourish. Not that we always want to be controlled by our emotions or you know, act in our emotions, but we want to make sure that we have a safe environment where our emotions can have their way within a safe boundary or parameter. And we have to develop relationships where that type of safety is celebrated, it's planned, and is really designed. It's done intentionally.
Dr. Roz, I'll let you have the last minute. Your best advice for living your best emotionally independent life?
I think the first thing that you have to do is understand your emotions. I don't think a lot of people really understand how they feel, what that feels like in their body, how that influences how they're thinking, and how that influences their behavior. So once you become very clear on what you are feeling, most people can say, oh, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm upset. Most people can understand those feelings and express those feelings, but what about those feelings of, I feel abandoned, I feel neglected? Like, people don't know what that really looks like or what that feels like, or how that is displayed. And so I think becoming very aware of how you are experiencing feelings and what feelings you may be experiencing makes all the difference in the world. Because until you can label it, you can't understand it, if that makes sense.
Yes, indeed. And emotional health is primary. Emotional wellness is primary as you enter into, you know, a relationship. As, you know, I suggested earlier, if you're happy before the relationship and you get into it and now you are happier, then you are fed. Your soul is being fed, you still have an opportunity to really be yourself, even in that intimate, romantic, loving relationship. And I don't think there's much more that you can ask for. Dr. Roz Aker Black and James Marshall, I want to thank you so much for participating in this great conversation and my great questions. And hopefully we've given all of our listeners something to think about. So thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, July 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.